recording Eric Peterson from on the 5th of May 2016. Eric is going to record and tell us about his life.
Eric Peterson, born the 21st of the 8th, 34 in Hastings, lived at 505 Seward Road, which is now Windsor Avenue, went to Parkvale Primary School, then to Napier Boys High by bus. The reason for going to Napier Boys High was because my brother had taken the agricultural course there, and so I went on the bus with him. I played for the first 15 for 2 years and represented the school also at athletics. Started work for Firestone Tyre Distributors on the 4th of the 12th, 1950, at a wage rate of £2.68 a week. Worked for Firestone for 25 years and became the manager of the retail branch, which was the second biggest tyre retailer in New Zealand. I was there for 7 years, then left about the same time as a lot of other chaps for the reason that Firestone policies were getting a bit hard to work with. And the same people went back into the tyre business for General Tyres, who had the Bandag retreading process for truck tyres. We all went back about the same time, and the retreading process had been bought in New Zealand by Russell Pettigrew, who had started in the carrying business when he bought three trucks from my father and had the contract for the sawn timber from McLeod and Gardner's Bill at Pohokura on the Taupo Road. While going to primary school, I had to milk 3 to 5 cows night and morning for about 3 years, separated the milk and left the cream at the gate for the Heretonga Dairy Company to collect, and pushed bike back home 2 miles from their bottom end of Selwood Road, then caught the 7:45 bus to Napier. After leaving school, I joined the Hamoana Rugby Club, which led me to meeting my wife of many years, and I made the Hawke's Bay Junior Reps as the captain, then played for 7 years for Hastings High School Old Boys, and while I made the Hastings Sub-Union Rep team each year, never made the Hawke's Bay team. After finishing playing rugby, I started deer stalking more seriously, and the venison, the feral venison, was starting to be exported, and a lot of money was being made by the carting and butchering the beasts. I built a cooler room at the back of the garage at Havelock North and started buying deer for Consolidated Traders, who were the exporters to Germany. The export lasted till health regulations forced by hygienic procedures to close the selling of wild game. I'd kept up my interests in rugby, serving on the Hastings Sub-Union and the Hawke's Bay Union, and being appointed to the manager of the Hawke's Bay team. During this period, the Hawke's Bay players, through cutting and selling firewood, raised enough money to send a team to Australia to play 3 games. We played Queensland, New South Wales and New South Wales Country. After managing General Tyres for about 7 years, they decided they would sell the franchise. And while all was going well, it was a time when all sorts of prices and types and makes of tyres were being offered. So deciding that the volatile market was not for me, I had to find something else. About this time, a rural delivery mail contract became available, as this became my next employment project.
How many children did you have then?
We had 4 children, 2 boys and 2 girls, who all still live around Hastings or the surrounding district.
And I interrupted you with the mail.
I was doubtful at the start as to what would become a very enjoyable, rewarding job, and most satisfying doing my working life that I've ever had.
Where was your first run?
Clients all appreciated anything you did for them, and there was no trouble with the account collection, unlike some of the other occupations I had. Although it was mainly a mail delivery, it was also a paper delivery and a freight service. The freight side of the business increased to such an extent that some days I had to take a trailer and handle the bulk freight. I had to take four-wheeler motorbikes to Whittaker's for servicing so that I could pick them up at night, have them at Whittaker's for 8 o'clock in the morning, pick them up at lunchtime and have them back to the cocky by that evening. It saved the farmer spending a day in town waiting for the service of his bike. I was doing something like 60,000 k's a year and had five different vehicles during the 10 years that I had the run. The run went from Hastings to Pukitat Post Office and then up the Dartmoor Road to the Waihau Road, from Waihau Road out to Pardoka Store and Post Office as it was then, and then down the Henley and Huarangi Roads and back out to the Pukatitu Road back home. When I first started, the paper was coming out about 4:30 at night, so it was 9 or 10 o'clock at night before I got home. Then when it started to come out in the morning, it was a whole lot better.
Much bigger. Did Anne used to get up and get your breakfast for you?
Well, she had tea at home, you know.
Oh.
and she usually had a couple of gins on the counter too when I got in at night, Erica.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yes.
Am I still recording?
Good. Yes. Oh. Yes. So yeah. Did any of the children go with you on some days on the holidays?
Yes, yes, a lot of them. In fact, my eldest grandson did the run for me for a week or two. I wanted to go on holiday. I think he was the youngest rural delivery person in New Zealand at the time. But he had the okay by the people that run it. Chap David Bond actually ran it, and he okayed him to do the job.
And did you stop and have cups of tea in that with the farmers or farmers' wives?
Frequently. It was hard to get the job done without being offered a cup of tea. And you had to be, not rude, but politely turn it down. Otherwise, you'd have stopped at everybody's place. Mm. Yeah. It was great. And as I say, it was the most enjoyable job I had in my working life.
Which was the biggest station that you would have visited on that?
Oh, we went to Mangatut. I serviced to Mangatut with freight and that, and that was probably the biggest at the time. Although Pardoka Station, although it's not that big now, but at one stage Pardoka, I think, was about 30 or 40,000 acres, but it's down in size now, but it'd still be 5,000 acres, Pardoka Station, which I serviced also.
And how did you communicate with your customers, as it were? Would you ring up at night, you know, all daytime at all, or not? If they wanted you to pick something up from somewhere...
They'd ring me.
They'd ring you.
That's typical. Two days.
He is showing me a typical 2 days of Monday and Tuesday where he's logged in his book about 20 on one page and 20 on the other page, and all the local names of people who wanted something and were happy for him to bring it out. So did you charge them different things?
That was the freight. If I bought it, that was the cost of the article.
Right, so you logged it all into your diary
every
day.
Yeah, every day, yeah.
We will say that in another part of this knowledge bank, we will put some of those photos of those pages, if you're agreeable.
Yeah, no, that's good as gold.
So can you tell us any funny incidents that happened?
There was quite a few funny incidents, but, you know, some of them aren't relatable, you know, not fit for publication, you might say.
Yes.
Erica.
How about your granddaughter? She said, Granddad, I want to drive. Hannah. And she shot off like anything. She's still got a foot hard on the accelerator. They were coming down the hill, weren't you? Yeah. I'd love to have been there. It would have been so funny, yeah.
She didn't end up in the drain at the bottom.
No.
And did you go duck shooting on those places and things, or go deer hunting, deer stalking?
Yeah. In the back of Mangatut and that you a lot of deer there. I used to go there pig hunting and deer stalking on Mangatut here.
Now, we're talking about what years, from what year?
Well, I had the run from 92, 93, right through to 2003.
Yes. And did you take over from somebody who'd been doing it for years before?
I took over from Anne Brown, who'd been doing it for 4 or 5 years, I think. And the last day was the 20th of the 8th, 2003, and it was the day before my 69th birthday, 2003.
And you and Anne have been married, I think, 60 years in August.
60 years in August,
isn't it?
Yes.
Did you go on any of the mail runs at all, Anne?
Yes, I did used to go. Yes, I loved it too.
And did you make him a thermos of tea or anything to take? Or
he didn't need it.
Well, it didn't take that long, didn't it? Well, it was about six hours.
For him?
Yeah.
And in your day-to-day, would you be home then erratically, different times?
Yes, but not that much. You know, you might be half an hour earlier or half an hour later of the night, but, you know, when the paper started coming out in the morning, but I didn't get away from here till lunchtime because of the freight that I had to pick up and that. And they still had their paper by early afternoon up the road there. And I'd be home by 5:30, 6 o'clock then.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, no, it was good, yeah.
And did you deliver bread as well?
Bread, milk, everything.
Everything, yeah. Yes.
Used to buy the groceries for a lot of people. I did all the...
Chemist,
yeah. All sorts of things. If you go any of under those pages, you'll see that. That's the last day.
Oh, that's it. Eric has put on the last day. That's it. He thinks he's going to escape, but he's got another sheet of paper here.
Oh,
what
that's
is this?
That's just when I...
When he finished the run, he got an acknowledgement, mail service contract 5348 for the Napier Puketapu Waihau Rural Delivery. I'm pleased to advise that the assignment of the above-mentioned mail service contract to Glenn Sutherland is approved and effective from the 21st of August 2003. Now, did you take him to get him orientated to the trip?
For a week, yes.
For a week? And did you have your own vehicle? Did he have his own vehicle?
No, I sold the vehicle with...
With the mail run?
Yeah.
Did you carry dogs, you know, sheep dogs, and anybody into the vet or anything like
yes,
that?
Yes, yes, yes.
And did you see... pigs and deer, wild pigs or deer on your trips at all?
Yes. A couple of nights, deer ran across the road in front of me, yes. And then I seen them just past Sacred Hill Winery up there, by a pine plantation up there. There was a deer standing on the edge of the pine plantation one day. Next day when I took the rifle, he wasn't there, of course.
He'd gone. When you dropped off the mailbag, and I'm from a history of having mailbags dropped off, did you toot your horn so that people knew you'd been, or you
no,
just...
No, I didn't have mail bags. I just put piecemeal.
Piecemeal.
Yeah.
Right. So at the back of your van, did you have a slot for each person's mail so you could sort it before you went, or you just
knew? I sorted it. It was all sorted at the post office in Hastings, and that I sorted it out and put it all in slots.
Yes.
And then put it in the box. In yes. order of delivery.
You'd have to do that
to get there. Yeah.
And did they provide you at that time with overalls or clothing or anything?
No.
Special?
You could buy shirts and that from them with New Zealand Post. I don't think I ever bought them. But they're just T-shirts and that with New Zealand Post.
And tell me a little bit about one of the main stations and then one of the smaller stations, about perhaps how many houses were on it or not.
Mangatut would probably be the biggest station, and I think it would have six houses for shepherds and that, and I think at the moment they've got a manager and four other shepherds on the place at Mangatut now, and they've got I think it's a nine-stand shearing shed there, and it's just on 7,000 acres. It's a farm that was developed originally. It was owned by the Bell Estate, who owned several blocks up there. They own Te Kowhai, Don Juan, Hawkston and Mangatut. And in about the early 1940s, Sir Lou Harris bought it off the Bell family, and they had it till early 1990s, and Peter Grieve bought it. But the Harrises had spent a lot of money on it and developed it to a large extent, and they made it into virtually a model farm. They roaded right to the back, watered. They got springs right up the top of the farm and the water recirculation right down through the farm. And there's no gateways between paddocks. There's all cattle stops. So there's no gates to open if you... Oh, yeah. No, it's incredible. Plus, there was a lot of pine planted for forestry out there. And that's where we cut the firewood for the Hawke's Bay rugby team to... go to Australia in. Yeah,
yes.
That's what we did.
Would you bring it in the van?
No, we had trucks. Richard Hunt, who was the Captain of the Hawke's Bay at that age owns Haulage Transport, so he had one of his trucks and somebody else's. I'm trying to think who the other person was, and we carted in him, dropped it all at my place at Bridge Par, and on the weekend the boys from the team had come out and saw it up and sold it and raised the money, as I say, to go to Australia. Yeah.
Did you strike bad weather when you didn't manage to get home at all?
No.
Any storms or anything
no.
in that period of time?
No, that no.
You didn't get snowed in or anything?
No, no. It was snow. It wasn't quite high enough to get much snow. I did have snow once or twice, but it hardly stayed on the road. I wasn't up high enough. I used to go through to Ball's Clearing, which is up past Puketitri, on a Saturday to deliver the paper up there, because the paper didn't run on a Saturday for the chap that normally did up to Puketitri didn't run on a Saturday, so I used to take the paper up there on a Saturday. Not long after starting to do the run, dairy farming was getting a bit of a good hearing, and several farms were converted to dairying while I was doing the run up there, and they, of course, had a lot of supplies and freight to cart up to them, because they seemed to be a lot more intensive than the sheep and cattle farming was. I was just trying to quickly count how many farms were converted to dairying. 12 on that run. There was 3 down the Waihau Road, 1 down the Price Coburn Road, and 2 down the Hawkson Road, including Dave Bone, you know, from the Bones. Dave Bone converted his to dairying at that time. And then 3 down the Henley-Hurangi Roads.
Any wine growing at grape growing well, at yes, all started
I,
then?
I used to service Sacred Hill Winery. In fact, I used to cart all their... They had at that stage, they were running the restaurant up there. And I used to take all the fresh vegetables and supplies up for the restaurant. And several times I'd make a trip early in the morning to take the supplies up there, because
as a truckload,
yeah, and I'd come back and then start to run. Yeah, I know they were very good to me too. The Sacred Hill Winery, I'm still on their list as a family member.
Well, that's good. So you built up a rapport.
Oh, yeah.
Between all these farmers and the farms' wives and children.
Yeah.
Did you have any accidents, crashes, or anything like that in the time
the
when
only,
you were doing it?
The only accident I had, I bought a new truck, and when I say truck, new, small, you know, utility, was a 1,500 weight truck. And the front wheel fell off one day just as I was pulling out of a letterbox, and apparently it had only done a couple of thousand Ks at this stage. And the garage, I think the truck may have been in an accident before I bought it, although I bought it brand new, and the garage accepted that it was their fault that they hadn't tightened up the steering rod
on
it, and it dropped off.
Shocking.
Yeah. Oh, the wheel didn't fall off, actually, it just came adrift, but the steering arm fell off, so that was interesting. But I think it was the only accident I have. No, I didn't have an accident the whole time, did I? No.
And you didn't run over a sheep or anything? Or a cow?
No, never hit a cow. No. Well, in the earlier days, like, I can remember when my father was carting the timber from Pohokura, and there was roadmen there was one at Esdale, and then one a bit further on at Tipahui, and then there was one over the other side going down into the Mohawker River, and they all lived in little huts on the side of the road, and they had wheelbarrows and shovels, and they used to keep the drains clear and fill the potholes in on the road. And then every so often the grader would go over about once every 12 months. Yeah.
And what years would that be?
That was early 40s, you know.
Right.
But he was carting that timber during the Second World War. You see, yeah. I see he sold out to Russell Pettigrew in about 1946. Yeah.
So you didn't go as a soldier at all overseas?
No, I was never old enough. I was only 11 when the war was declared.
And so did any of your family go?
No. I had an uncle that went.
Teddy,
yeah, yeah, I'm just going to say. Yeah. I had an uncle that went, yeah.
What about you, Anne? Did any of your family go?
My mother had two brothers that went, Uncle Ted and Uncle Shock.
Shock, yeah.
They did, and they came home.
Either of your fathers, did they have any... I'm bringing it because it's wartime we're talking about. Did any of them go the IMR, the Independent Mounted Rifles, or anything like that?
No, but my father's trucks were all what they call the LOC, lines of communication, and they're all painted up khaki, and those are the trucks that he's carting timber from Pohokura with, and they were khaki. So after the war, I had to do a paint job on them, with the back into the colours of his fleet. Yes, there was a school at Waihau, which has since been closed. There's a school at Pārtaka, which is quite a big school nowadays, and I'm not so sure that they haven't got a dental clinic there even now. You know how they have the dental clinics at schools? I think they've got one of those there now. And there's a school at Puketitri, of course.
And did local people use the school for meeting halls and things and swimming pools?
At Pārtaka, there's a hall there, proper hall there at Pārtaka, but that's the only hall. Well, there was a hall at Puketitri, but it burnt down few years ago, as did the hotel. They shifted the license from the hotel at Puketitri to Turangi. That was where in those days you had to have licenses were hard to come by, and they had to be looked after pretty carefully. And the one from Puketitri went to Turangi, to the new hotel at Turangi. I know that. And shortly after, the Puketitri hotel burnt down, as did the hall.
At Christmas.
Christmas time was quite a pleasant time. On the run, we used to get sheep given to us or wines and that, yeah, but I think one year we got 4 sheep in total, you know, 4 lambs.
Oh, lovely.
You know, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it was.
Very good to feed the family.
Yeah, yeah. And then when I stopped doing the run, they put on a show for me at the Pārtaka Hall and gave me all sorts of...
Great turnout.
Oh, it was a great turnout. I can't remember now, but, you know,
Cheers, outside chairs
and all that. Farmlands gave me thermos flasks and a chili bag and, you know, and something, as I say, you were appreciated, you know, and you didn't mind helping them because they were
appreciated
what
everything
you did for them. They did. And as I say, there was never any trouble collecting accounts, you know. I'd get my accounts out and put it in the letterbox, and next day the cheque would be in the mailbox for you, you know. When you put the next lot of mail in. I had a list of my age creditors, you know, a list like that of all the people I dealt with, and there's nobody over 30 days.
That's marvellous. Over a 10-year...
Yeah, yep.
10-year time, that's very good.
I didn't have a write-off.
So the highest point of that was you brought up your family doing that, you were happy in your job, and then did you go and do another job after that?
No, well, I was 69.
You retired,
and
didn't have
and
to.
Got very
you
sick.
You were sick.
We had a place at that stage. We had a place at Rich Par, and we decided we'd sell that, and we went to live in Havelock, and then from Havelock down to here.
Do you think that's a good place to end, Eric?
Well, yes.
Eric,
you know,
and Anne, thank you very much. It's great. They might call you back for some other part.
That's all right.
Interviewing Anne Peterson, who was married in 1956 to her husband, Eric Peterson, and she has come back to tell us about her time as a telegraph lady working for the Hastings Post Office. They both live in Hastings, and they have given us a couple of photographs for the archives and also Eric's day-by-day workbook. And Anne has given us a photograph of herself with the car that she drove last of all, delivering telegrams to the outer area of Hastings and Havelock North. So over to you, Anne. Just start 1969. You went to the post office, I think, and you would deliver the telegrams. So what would you do? You'd put on your grey dress and you'd go to work.
Yeah. What hours did you work? I worked from about 8 till 4.
And you had your shoes provided as well?
As well, yes.
Yes.
They were. And were you delivering all that time, or did you have a lot of downtime when you were waiting for
I would have time, yes, because they used to spread them out, write them out on the sheet that I'd have, and when they'd finish with that, they'd say, there are Anna, and they'd be in envelopes, and I'd take them to deliver them.
So you took them as a batch?
Yes, I would. Sometimes when the works were closed and then they were going to open again, I'd probably have 14 on a pad that I'd have to enter myself, be 14 telegrams, and then I'd go off with them.
But normally how many would have been on the list?
Well, there'd be about 14 or 15.
That's the busy time. Yeah. But would it be the same on an ordinary day?
No, it would be less. It was always a busy time when the works sent out notices, no work or work.
And is that the Taumoana works, the meat works?
Timona.
So
there was two works, it was Wakatu and Timona.
Timona and Wakatu, but I didn't go to those places.
Mm.
They were from the head people there saying, come back to work.
You went to the employees to say it's time to start.
To start work, yes.
And they dealt with the employers, the works themselves, dealt with the post office, and you just did the delivery to the workers.
Yes.
Now, you were telling us before about delivering to having to leave messages at doorways. Would you like people weren't home?
If nobody was home, I would leave a little white card and the name of the people and where it was from, and I would put it up on the door. And you really were never allowed to leave any kind of telegram in the letterbox. You'd have to take it back, and you might have to take it out 3 times in that one day.
Oh, so you'd have to go back there again and again?
Yes, you would, yes. Oh. Not all the time, but you did have to.
If there was somebody home and the note had gone off the door, would you assume that they'd gone to pick it up themselves?
Well, no. That staff would tell me, where I was working, they'd say, oh, Anna, they've been to this one or that, and I'd say, good, because I'd think, well, I don't have to deliver it out again. Yes.
And the ones that you did put in the postbox, in their mailboxes, were not the works ones?
No. And a lot of people send telegrams in those days, and I got to know, yes, they live there, she works here. You got to know them after all those years.
Did Eric actually help you with any of the deliveries?
No.
It would be, some of them would have been your neighbours, would they not, if you were living in Flaxmere and delivering to the same area?
Yeah, well, mostly in the lower part of Flaxmere, you know, where the men, most of them worked at the works, and when there was no work, they weren't doing anything, and then they got called back.
I'm probably sidetracking here, but what about weddings and things? Did you deliver to church halls and things like that for weddings?
No, not so much, but to the houses, to the places where the bride might be living, or I'd have a few of those.
Did they have a different cover for their envelopes for that?
No, just the same.
Because later on, I think they were quite ornamental. So the works one were just plain white envelopes,
Yeah.
And with the letters stuck on, the message stuck onto it.
Paper with the letters on it.
It had come off on a ticket.
Ticket
tape.
And did you know what was in the telegrams? So you wouldn't know that you were giving a death notice to someone?
I would be told before, in the... that Laurie was a man, he might say, Anna, this one here is to tell them that their brother's passed away. And so, you know, I would know, but they wouldn't know till I'd gone, they opened it. But, yes, that was always a little bit sad.
We tend to think of telegrams as happy, but there must have been a lot the other way.
Yes.
And so if you were driving about 100 kilometres a day, in those cars, which cars did you have first? Morris Minor, was it?
I had three minis.
Minis.
Three minis, and then I had the other one that I can't remember what.
Cortina, is it?
Cortina. The one in the photo.
That little one.
Yes. And were you responsible for filling it up with petrol and everything?
Yes, I had to go and I had to keep it clean. Yes, to clean it and put petrol in, check the oil. If I had a problem, I'd ask the post office men.
The service stations used to do that in those days, anyway. Mm. They had people on the pumps.
They did.
People checking your oil and that.
And fill it up with water, everything.
But any time there was something I wasn't happy with, I would let them know, the manager know, because even if it was nothing really, I used to cover myself by
telling him. Yes.
You would have a designated service station you went to get.
Yeah, we had the same one.
In those days it was all under contract, like the service stations would tender for the supply of fuel. Yeah, same with how I know I was in the tyre service for so long. We used to do the same thing. the supply of tyres to the government. Yeah.
That makes a big difference.
So what did you do when you weren't delivering?
I would sit. So they had a stand there, you know, the seat thing. Would just sit there. There'd be no, I would do nothing else inside. I was solely to get the telegrams and deliver them.
Did you do knitting or something while you were waiting?
Oh, no. Oh, I'd like to. I nearly bought it today. No.
So yeah. would you go in and... So how many would be working in the post office at that time, in the telegraph part, perhaps?
Where the telegrams came through, yes. We had an area about that long. We had
the length about of the room, yes.
Four people receiving four. The telegrams.
It was big business in those days.
Yeah,
it
was. And, and they would be reading it like they'd say, oh, telegram for Ann Peterson, and they'd say what it was about, because they were... It was being referred to them, so that's how... Because I used to listen to them sometimes. Well, you couldn't help it because you're sitting there.
You wouldn't. Were they taking it down over the ticker tape? Was that talking as well as...
The telegram was coming, so it was coming from Wellington. They'd say, this is so-and-so our street in Wellington, and they would repeat it to make sure they got it right.
So it was transferred by voice, and then those people would type it onto...
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, okay, onto the strips that were stuck on the form.
That's right.
That's what I'd be interested a bit in, that what those machines looked like. Was it an ordinary typewriter, do you think, on the tapes or not?
No, they were big things that each one had.
Were they quite quick typing it?
Oh, because I'd been there for quite some time.
And they were typists.
Yeah, and when you got the hang of it, I suppose it was much easier.
You didn't get called upon to make their cups of tea or something for them?
No, there's one lady that was always sort of busy, and she seemed a bit shy to get a cup of tea, so I'd say, I'll get you a cup of tea, I'm going to have one.
And you were by a car, and there were people who biked. Would you often end up both sitting, waiting at the same time?
Yes, that could happen.
Sounds as though you did sit around quite a bit.
Oh,
at times.
Oh, well, there might have been times, but I was fairly busy.
So how many trips out would you make?
How many telegrams at a time?
Mm. Well, you said you did up to 14 at a time.
Yeah, that'd be 14. But then,
so you did five times a day, or you only did three trips, or how long?
Oh, no, I'd be in and out. I was
on the road most of the day.
Did she wave to you as she went past, Eric?
I can't remember.
I remember one day I was in Blacksmere. And
I was on the road
too.
Depends
what he was up to at the time.
Yes.
And I had my radio going loud, and next thing I thought, looked up and here's something flashing around, and I thought, oh, I don't know who that is. So I kept going, next thing I pulled in front of me, it's cops.
Oh, were you speeding?
And I said,
yeah, she was quite quick.
And he said, you know, you're going fast. And I said, oh, not me. Anyway, tatted away, and he said, well, you work for the government and I do too, so on your way.
You'd be a bit more careful after that for a while.
Oh, they were pretty good though, you know. Touch wood, I never got a ticket for all the years I drove cars. No.
Only pulled up the once.
Yeah, got stopped, yeah.
And then I had
no ticket.
I had my own car. It stopped, so they got it, Eric and one of the others got it going. And then they said, now go like hell and don't stop it. So anyway, I got stopped that day too, and I said, look, I said, well, my husband was flat, but he told me to get in it and go like hell. He said, oh, off you go.
That's in your own car.
It had a flat battery, I think.
Oh, and you wanted to charge the battery.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I got it going, and then I said, keep going, you know. I didn't mean to go that fast.
Past the hospital.
So who would deliver them after 4 o'clock then?
Nobody.
Nobody.
No,
they'd have to wait till the next day.
Yeah, they'd have to wait till the next day.
Did the postman actually take any of the telegrams then?
No.
Because in Masterton, I remember that the postman actually did in Masterton.
Oh, really?
In the 1940s, that would be, the postman delivered the telegrams sometime.
Yeah.
On foot, you know, the postman used
to
walk, or sometimes have a bike.
They never had as far to go in those days. So.
No.
We were open on Saturday morning, 9 to 12.
And you worked that time as well?
Yes, I did. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Every Saturday, or did you take turns at Saturday?
No, I worked on a Saturday morning.
So were you at that stage from 1969 to 86, roundabout, you were the only woman driving a car and delivering the telegrams? Mm. So it would be interesting to talk to Russell.
Russell Anderson, yes.
I haven't seen him, but I'll make a point of Russell Anderson.
Russell Anderson, and he was on the bike.
Yes.
Yes, we're going to follow up on him.
Yes, I will.
Because that'll add to it.
And he lived in Windsor Avenue, which is now Windsor Avenue, it was Selwood Road in those days. He lived in Windsor Avenue too, and he lived virtually opposite where I was. He used to live in Windsor Avenue. So I haven't shifted far. It's just around the corner.
If I had a lot of telegrams that came out, usually about, say, 3:30, 4:00, I'd have this big list of them and I'd have to take them, and then when I'd come back, the staff would have gone home, the rest of the staff.
Did you have a key to get in to put them back in if there was any left or any brought back?
Never got overtime though, Erica.
No, you didn't get overtime.
And I went up and down the stairs, I don't know how many times a day, and I was walking up the stairs one day and the St John's man was there, and I'm saying, oh, this will be the death of me. I've been up here so many times. And he said, Anna, he said, you keep walking, because he said it's good exercise. So,
so it's situated upstairs.
Yes.
That room where they came in. Down below, were the counters down below for people to drop in a telegram they wanted sent or something?
Yes, I suppose they could. Yes, I suppose so.
In the post office, because you would go into the post office.
Yes, that's right. That there was a slide there for the telegrams in there. And phone boxes too. You used to go in and you say you wanted to ring Waipawa or Waipaka or Danny. You'd go in and say, I want to ring such and such number in Waipaka. And they'd put the call through, and then they'd say, your call's waiting in box 1 or 2, Mr. Peterson. And then you go in and answer the phone.
Was it separate building or separate stairs?
That was part of the post office and savings bank too.
Yes.
Well, I don't know. We used to go in. That way was the banking bit, and this way was the postal.
And out the back, where I was, they'd have all these men, staff working, putting...
Sorting them.
Yes, sorting them and putting them in the... And if there was a new street that I was not really aware of, they would always tell me, I'd go through and I'd say, whereabouts is this street? I really don't know. And they would look straight away. They'd been there a long time, and they'd tell me where to go.
Now, can you still remember where all the streets are?
No.
Oh, you'd be quiet. The lady's asking me. Well, most of them. Yeah, most of them, yes.
So you wouldn't get lost like we do sometimes. I do sometimes. Can you explain a bit about when your shoes wore out?
Well, if the backs went down or you got a bit one-sided, you'd just go up to the manager, because there's one above everyone, and say, my shoes have had it, and he'd say, oh, well, Anna, here. And he'd give me a bit of paper to disappear from Hannah's.
Hannah's in Hastings.
Yes.
And where did your dresses come from?
Well, I think they I'm just trying to think about that before. I think you ordered them through them.
Through the post office. And your coats? Coats. Did you have a hat?
No.
And no gloves or anything for the cold weather?
Oh, I would have had gloves of my own.
Your own. Yeah. It wasn't part of your uniform.
No.
Because the banking uniform now that my daughter-in-law had was quite... she had raincoat as well as woolly coat. This was when she was working for National Bank. Can you tell us that story? Because I love that story about taking that telegram into that man.
In Low Street. Well, the guy that I worked for, he knew where it was going and that. And I said, oh, I don't know about this. He said, that's your job, Anna. That's your job. So I go around there and there's all people, mostly dark people, standing there. And I got the right number, so I got out, and they were all looking at me, and I said, oh, I've got a telegram here for Mr. So-and-so. And they said, I'll give it to him. I said, I'm sorry, but you're not allowed to. I have to hand it to him myself. And he got a sign for it. So anyway, that was all right. And he said, well, he's in his bed, in there, in the bed. Okay. So I go through, And I said, Mr. Sides, yes, I said, I have a telegram for you. And I couldn't give it to anyone else because that's the rule. Mm. And anyway, so I turned to come out and I thought, any minute now I'm going to bop on there. But they were so helpful. They really were, but I was so nervous. Mm. And, you know, really, the guy that gives you out the telegrams, I said, oh, I can't do this. He said, Anna, that's your job.
Did they actually generally call you Anna, all of them?
Oh, one used to call me Annie. Yes. Mostly Anna.
Do you call her Anna or Anne?
Anne.
Because that is your name.
Yeah. Oh, I call her lots of names, but usually Anne, you know.
Yes.
And the boys on bikes would be college boys who would work after they'd been to school?
They were young men. Like Russell, he worked full-time, Russell. Mm. Yeah. And then we'd get somebody after school that would come in and like ride from 3 to 5 or 3.30 or something, 4.30, whatever.
Just to help out at the end of the day.
Yes.
And was there other women?
Well, yes, there was. Stephanie Reeves, I think, but there was a lady that had the job before
me.
Taking
the telegram.
She had the same job, but there's only, I think, one other lady, and it might have been a couple to start with, and then they sort of left and got married in there.
What about Christmas time? Did they have a bonus or anything for post office workers or anything like that?
No, but I always remember the Christmas was this horrible boss, the head one. I reckon he used to pick on me, thought he was smart. Anyway, I couldn't stand him, but I was polite. Mm. Anyway, we had a Christmas party once. And here he is, half looking at me, saying, oh, come on, Anna. And I thought, yes, I could have swore. You know,
you wish Derek was there to look after you.
No, I didn't get invited to the Christmas.
Oh, no. Oh, so you didn't take partners to the Christmas things?
Just one upstairs? Yeah.
So I think
yeah.
It was like the Albert Hotel or a couple of hotels.
Oh, you went to the RSA Club, I think.
And no partners? You weren't allowed to take Eric.
It was just a staff.
A staff one. And what about the children? Did they have a children's Christmas party for the staff's children?
No.
Nothing like that.
The Heritong Club did, used to.
Yeah, they always.
Right, now when we were chatting before, you told me that you were amongst the first to move into Flaxmere. Can you go over that again?
They had what they call a parade of homes. All the builders, you know, built a home down there, and we bought one of those, and our builder was, or the builder that built our house was Fred Phipps. Mm. I think he's still even building houses around Hastings.
Yes.
It's a nice house. So, and then we were there for a while, and then I bought a block of land out at Bridge Par, which we later built on and shifted out there. But we're in Flaxbury Avenue for, I suppose, 12.
How many people would have been, how many houses perhaps, or people would have been there at that stage?
At that stage.
And that, what year?
They were all virtually contained in one block, you know, from Omaha, who brought in that way, to Flaxmere and to Chatham Road.
Would there be 20 houses or 50?
Oh, somewhere in between there.
And the school, 30. Was the school there?
The school,
children
no, the school wasn't
school?
There then.
No,
no,
school.
No, the Flaxmere
Where
school
did the
wasn't
children
there.
Go to school?
The youngest one went to Pakawa Road. Frimley.
She
went there.
Yeah, I know, but I would have thought Twyford School was...
Vicky went to Marie. Where did they go to school?
Well, Marie went to Hastings Girls High.
Yeah.
But as a
Percy was at Hastings Boys High, and then of course he left there. Peter went to Hastings Boys High too.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm. All from Flaxmere.
And did they come
but
in
as
on
from
their
primary
bikes?
School, they went to Frimley.
How did they go to school, Anne? Did they catch a bus?
A bus, I think.
Oh, okay. So the children were bused from Flaxmere.
Yes.
And over a period of time, how long would you have been at Flaxmere before you moved out towards Bridge Park? And which part now would you rather live in if you weren't in the village?
Out at Havelock, shifted from Havelock to the village.
Havelock was all right. I did like Bridge Park. We never had
that was
27
the best.
Years.
We had land out there, you know.
Then I got six. When I got six, we had to put on the market.
We built a house in Havelock, yeah.
The village is lovely, I like it.
Thank you very much on behalf of the Knowledge Bank. And we're going to catch up with Russell Anderson.
Yes, I will be in touch with Russell. Yeah.
And he will add a bit about being on the bike and meter reader. Yes, and we'll tell him Anne sent us.
Oh, yes, I know Anne. He'll say, no, I'll talk to him.